Hello and welcome to another episode of Relationship Alive. This is your host, Neil Satin. How do you really see another person? And how do you allow yourself to be seen? How can you deepen into knowing the people around you, especially your partner, more honestly and more fully? These seem like they would be obvious questions in the case of relationship, and yet so often we plunge into partnership, driven by chemistry and desire, only to wake up later, sometimes years later, and find that we're simply going through the motions, vaguely or extremely dissatisfied, and knowing on some level that something more is possible. Today we're going to take this on directly to go to the heart of vulnerability, opening up to the experience of the moment with another person. Today's guest is Guy Sengstock, the earliest founder of Circling, and we'll be chatting about what that is. He's also the co-founder of the Circling Institute. He's an exceptional coach with a gift to help you see the water you're swimming in, something I hope we'll talk about today. Now, circling is a practice that allows you to experience what it's like to be fully gotten by other people, and for them to get a sense of what it would truly be like to be in your shoes. If you enjoyed episode 13 on attunement with Keith Witt, or episode 6 on developing shared consciousness with Patricia Albert, then you are going to love this deep dive into how to really get related with yourself and another human being. Guy has also generously offered a free 2-hour coaching session to one lucky listener. So to qualify, all you need to do is download the detailed show guide for this episode at neilsatin.com/circle. Or simply text the word PASSION to the number 33444 and follow the instructions. Guy Sengstock, thank you for that offer, and thank you so much for joining us today on Relationship Alive.
Thank you so much. I was so struck by how well you did that introduction, the sound of your voice. I almost forgot I was being interviewed. I was like, yeah, Guy Sengstock, be seen. I was like, the resonance of your voice just took me into a place where I was kind of in a flow state almost, just listening to you. So when you paused, all of a sudden I realized, uh-oh, wait a minute, I'm being interviewed. That's right.
That's awesome. Well, we're off to a good start. We're already in the flow.
Yeah.
And we're just starting.
Yeah.
Guy, it's so great to have you here. And the people listening don't know this, but I worked with you as you were my coach almost 2 years ago now. And actually, I think it was 2 years ago that we started. And such an amazing experience that was. And during that time was planted the seed for this podcast. So, we might talk a little bit about that later, but I just want to offer you my own personal gratitude to your help on this journey. And this podcast, as I've mentioned before, and I was telling you earlier, I've heard personally from so many people that have been positively impacted by the information that we're sharing. And I'm really happy to have you here to be a part of it, and just so thankful that you contributed to its actually being born. So thank you for that.
Thank you, received, my friend. That feels really, really great. And you're completely welcome.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. So, I started out by talking about you and talking about circling. And since I know we're going to be chatting about that, maybe we could just start out by saying, what is circling? And bridge from that into how can the ideas of circling, the experience of circling, be helpful for people listening in terms of their relationship?
Okay, great. Well, a couple of things. Circling to me, circling for me has been something that has caught my attention in 1996 and has kept my attention and even deepened my attention on it. Right, on circling, and circling itself has deepened the quality of my attention for constantly, and is growing. And given that my incredible amount of ADD for me to keep my attention in one place. Something must be really, really alive for me to stay focused like that, you know? And I think that speaks to what circling actually is, which is, you could say it's a practice, that when done in a group, is simply following and giving ourselves to what is most alive in that moment in the relationships that are there. So you could say it's a presence practice, just like, you know, you could say that yoga is a kind of presence practice or meditation is a kind of present practice. Whereas like maybe in the presence where the object, like maybe in meditation is on something like the breath or a mantra, right? And the object you could say in yoga is the body, right? In the postures. For circling, you could say that it's a present practice where the object is the relationships that are happening in that room. And so it's really simply like you take particular, you know, you have just like in yoga, you have downward dogs and you have the asanas, which are, you could say, ways of intentionally being in uncomfortable, right? So that like moving in that discomfort, right? When you get done with downward dog, when you're walking out on the street, not thinking about downward dog, your posture is just naturally a lot more open without thinking about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in circling, we have various, you could say, asanas, relational practices that are designed to have one be uncomfortable in a particular way, such that when they're out walking around in their life, they're just naturally more open to relationship and to be nourished by the relationships in their lives.
Yeah. So what would some of those relational asanas look like when you're practicing circling?
Well, I'll say a couple of things. So it's like one that actually comes to mind that I would say is at the heart of circling would be simply like speaking the moment with the person who's being circled or whoever it is that you're relating with, such that you're speaking what you're noticing and what you're feeling and what you're experiencing with that person or with that group of people as you're experiencing it, right? And just to give some context to what that, you know, the significance of that is that most human conversations are triangular, where you and I talk about a subject, right? We talk about things, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare. Right. And some people go their whole lives actually without ever actually entering into a whole other universe of conversation, which is not talking about something, but speaking and listening and talking about what's happening right now in this moment with you. And when you do that, like the moment that one does that, I've never seen it not be the case. The moment we do that, I never know what's going to happen after I get done sharing. And my level of aliveness, right, both excitement, right, and anxiety, like, increases, right? And you could say that that is definitely an asana, and one of the asanas in circling.
Yeah, and one thing that I really appreciated about the experience that I had with circling and was this, and I described it this way in the intro, that it's getting to know what it's like to be in the other person's shoes. But that's a phrase that we toss around, I think, without really parsing it apart, because my experience with circling was that I really felt like if someone asked me to make a decision as if I were that other person, I could have done it in that moment.
Yeah.
Which is a lot different than just being like, oh yeah, I kind of, like, I get where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't quite as connected.
Yeah.
So what is it about circling that brings about that experience of...
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting when you say, when you talk about that, like, you know, you could say, I really like the way that you put that, that if you were to be asked to make a decision as that person, you felt like you could do that, right? I think the difference is that really in circling, we really, one is we acknowledge ourselves as as you could say, nervous systems, right? That are inherently open to the world, transparent, like permeable to it and transparent to it. And we just live consistently as if that were actually the case, right? So like when I look over at you, I can actually start to imagine what it's like to be in your nervous system, right? To like, if I understand, whoa, what you're afraid of, right? Or even notice how what I'm saying is impacting you, right? I can start to get in, I can start to get close to things that you actually care about. And I think that that's one of the things that's circling in all deep conversations and all deep levels of intimacy. Really, I think in you can sum it up is like is that when I'm close to you, it really what I'm saying is I am close to knowing, understanding, and caring about what you care about and that you care about things. So it's kind of like you could say that we get together and we care about each other explicitly, and in caring about each other, we find out what we care about, right? And when I get really close to care, when I care about what you care about, all of a sudden I start to naturally find myself looking out of your eyes, right? I start to be able to anticipate like, oh, if you really care about how you're showing up in the world and that person wasn't paying attention to you, like I could imagine, for example, that you could easily feel rejected, right? Or very
Yeah.
things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it strikes me that there are these two poles that we often move between. One being like everything is going great and great in a relational space. And so I just assume that we care about the same things and we're operating from the same place and everything is really good. Until all of a sudden, like, the record scratches, and it's like, wait a minute. We weren't seeing things the same way. Now we see things totally differently, and you get in a disagreement or an argument. And then I think it can be so challenging to really, like, those are the moments where it's like, okay, I'm either assuming that everything's that I get your world and we were in the good place. Or now we're in this like really challenging place where we don't understand each other. And it's like in those moments, it can be so hard to like, how do I get your world in those moments? But usually that's not the question that people are asking. People are asking just like, you know, either how do we get back to safety? I think that's an important question if that's made conscious, or just like, how do I prove to you that I'm right or that you're wrong? Or, you know, that's maybe those are some less productive questions to ask in that moment.
Well, I really appreciate what you said. It's like the record goes, and then all the action stops. And what I'm hearing you say is like how I respond, right, to that moment, right, is going to make a huge difference to how
Yes.
the next moment is going to go, right? So you could say that first of all. In terms of as you were talking about, we're going along, and I'm assuming that like I'm talking, you know, that we're talking about the same thing, right? Because we're having this conversation, we're talking about it. So naturally, I'm gonna go left here because we just were talking about that thing, and so I'm gonna go left there. And so when I go left there, right, like all of a sudden, you know, your eyeballs pop out, right, in a rage, or something like that, right? And you're like,
Yeah.
right, and so in that moment, you could say that I had an assumption that we were talking about the same thing. And how do you know that you have an assumption? You don't, right? That's the nature of assumptions, right? Is they're in the background.
Right.
So when I'm in a relationship, those moments just simply make myself aware of an assumption. Right. And it's not bad that I have them. We all have them. In fact, if I know about it, then it's not an assumption. I think the first thing they get is like it's so natural. In fact, it's beautiful in deepening relationships to actually find places where I was assuming and I didn't know it. Because so that's the first part, which is like really, really like looking forward to places where there's dissonances, because then we can stop, right? And you could say like in that moment where I noticed that I had an assumption and we were talking about two different things. Rather than trying to get you to get that I was talking about the right thing and you were assuming the wrong thing, right? And rather than all the things that would like probably result in some kind of argument or some kind of repression of somebody on some part, what would happen is if actually those were moments where I got curious.
Yeah.
Right? Like what would happen is like, in fact, if you just think about it, like what would become of our relationships if my response to being triggered or to disagreement, right? My response was to be curious about you, about us, and about what's happening for me and you and us in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I love this because actually this is something that we talked about on last week's show, which was an episode with me and Chloe, where we were talking about how much curiosity and the practice of getting curious has transformed our relationship in moments of being triggered. So yes, 100% yes. And what are some ways that you get curious in those moments? What are questions that you like to ask?
Well, a couple of things. I like what you said. What in those moments, what do I do to get curious, right? That's the one person. So sometimes I remember like years ago, somebody sent me a text and there's this kind of big question that they sent and it shows up on my phone. And it asks, what is curiosity? I had no idea what is curiosity, but then I started to think about it and I was like, I don't know if I can tell you what curiosity is, but I can tell you this, it's the first thing to go that goes when I contract. Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, and it's also one of the first primary things I often notice when I'm open. Right? So whatever it is that curiosity is, it seems to be connected to like to my level of openness or my level of closeness. And so in those moments where it'd be a good idea to get curious are usually moments where I don't feel curious, right? So getting curious is a kind of, I find, is a walk, right? It's a walk that I consciously take, right? I practice curiosity. And then oftentimes the feeling of curiosity comes before I even recognize it. Or you could say, I notice that curiosity is there and I'm open after already being open. And then I realize it. So it's like those, like that walk of being in relationship with that person. And I would say that like simply like it starts off with one is like acknowledging that something just happened. Right. Hey. So pause. Right. Pause. I noticed like when I turned left, it seemed like your eyeballs popped out. Was I correct with that?
Yeah. Right?
The one is just acknowledging just what's happening with the intention to relate. Right. And then it could just simply be this. It's like, oh, so for you, like for you, what was that? Right. Right. For you, what way did you want to turn? And also, what was the impact of me turning left? Like, was I, like, you know, getting curious? Like, one big one is to find out and to get curious about how I occurred for that person. And it could be like, oh, so when I turned left, like, was I ignoring you? Was I not considering you? Right? Was I blaming you? What was turning left for you? Right?
Yeah, and I like that combination of taking just a simple action, like the turning left, and then by adding like, so what was that action for you? It gives that person a chance to reflect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a moment that they are also probably not feeling very curious.
Totally. Totally. And you could be like, and it's just simply like, because it's funny, as I was even just giving that example, I felt my chest open up, right? I felt myself leaning forward. Just the act of finding out, like, what was I doing for you? Like, in that, like, there's this, I find myself leaning in. Because I think that a lot of times, right, a lot of times with relationship, when I just demonstrate the intention to know you, and I implicitly acknowledge, right, and show you the fact that I actually care and acknowledge your otherness, right? That I acknowledge that you're a being that I actually don't have any, I don't have any authority to know what you're thinking or feeling unless you share it with me. And I want to know, I want to be give my awareness over to you and share it with you. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm having so many thoughts and feelings as you were describing that. Like, on one thing I noticed was when you were talking about that experience of leaning forward and like the act of offering to someone, wanting to really fully understand them and where they're coming from. Like, I actually got a little teary when you were saying that. And then I started thinking about, I wonder for the people listening, like some people, it might be really easy for them to say, oh, okay, well, when you turned left, I was thinking about that time that we blah, blah, you know, and it might be really easy for them. And then there might be people who hear that question, you know, what was turning left for you? And be kind of stuck with, like, I wouldn't even know how to respond to that question. So what could you offer someone who doesn't know in that moment? Like, like someone asks you, what was turning left to you? Or what was, like, when I ordered dinner for you, and instead of, like, I thought that would be this act of chivalry and, like, I was, whatever, I was showing up for you, but instead I could see it seemed like you got livid. What was that for you? Yeah, what about the person in that moment who's like, I don't really know how to respond to that?
Totally.
Or maybe hints for how to respond to that in a way that's generative.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Well, I think in the example that you just gave, and I'm imagining most of the time, what I don't know means I actually don't know, right? So, like, actually, I was imagining in that case, I don't know means I'm too fucking mad at you, right? I ain't giving you shit, right? Like I'm not gonna offer you anything, right?
And yeah.
And in that moment, here's the deal with closeness is that it's not something that you can do. It's something that happens, and we both end up in it, and it's definitely not something I can force. So it's like, if the bottom line is somebody don't want to say anything, we're free, right? we're free to like what it takes to be close really is a function of disclosing only that which I can only disclose. Like, no one, you can take away every freedom I have, right? If I tied you up and I put, like, you know, things in your eyes and took away everything, the one thing I can't manage or take away from you is how you are experiencing me tying you up, right?
Mm-hmm.
That experiencing and how that occurs for you, the only way I would know is if you told me. So the first thing to get is to really get that, like, man, when somebody reveals what's true for them, It is really a it is really an act of their own human freedom, in which it's really like a you could say, when I receive it, it's grace, because it's something I can't do for them, right? And I can't make it happen. So it's like, in that sense, it's like, really, I just want to acknowledge that there's nothing that I think I've been able to find in terms of intimacy that can actually make intimacy happen. I can invite it out, right? So in that case, so the thing I just noticed, I got curious about, is like, is, I don't know, is it'd be like, huh, I'm imagining, I would say it's probably something like, oh, I don't know, I'm imagining you, maybe you're too mad to talk right now. Is that true? Right. Or it's like, it's more like, oh, it's like, in asking you, how that is for you, do you feel like am I invading you? Am I pressuring you? Is it like, right? Am I trying to draw something out of you? What is that like? What is just my question, right, about how you're feeling for you, right? So it's inviting, like, who I am in this moment in your world out. Like, I want to know, which implicitly acknowledges that I care about that.
Yeah, I'm imagining the scenario of like that typical pattern that comes up in relationship of pursuing and distancing, and like one person always being the asker and the other person always being the stonewaller. And then I'm also imagining people who are blessed in relationship with someone who's a real partner in relating with them. And I feel like what this conversation is getting at is both of those, because I want, like, if you're at home or in your car or wherever listening to this and you have a willing participant who at least wants to try, I want you to come away from this with some tools to enhance that practice that you have with your partner. And I really love that. For me, I think it will change the experience of it to just think about it as an offering, as a gift in my partner revealing to me. Yeah, and then I was also, I mean, I was imagining the dinner table scenario that I had concocted, and I'm like just seeing this one person like, so when you're not responding to me now, like I'm imagining that's because, and then finally just like, fuck it, like I'm done. I'm not, you're always like this, and then they're out of there.
Totally. And it's like a, in another in a, you know in another way of, I would say, approaching that too, is more of a, of my own. So there's being permeable to who you are and what's happening to you, and really wanting to know, and showing curiosity and genuine interest. And also, there's also like just really revealing who I am, right, to you, in a way that's unarguable. Like it's like where, and that's the thing, is one of the things about circling we also talk about, is like really sharing, communicating with the intention to relate, right, through sharing just the gift of your own personal experience. And how I know whether or not I'm sharing something that is on my side of the street is that it can't be argued, right? So for example, if I say, hey, when you said I don't know, I just noticed that I was feeling anxious and leaning forward, right, when you said that. And then when you actually said the word I don't know, I felt even a little bit more anxious, right? And then I didn't feel like I felt nervous, and I didn't know what to do. And what I really just want is to feel close to you, right? So it's like, in that, like, if you could just imagine, like imagine hearing that. It's like there's nothing about what I just said that was like an assertion or an assessment, right? It was more a revelation, a revealing, a disclosing, and a displaying that had me open, and communicate the intention to relate. And it's something that the other person can't really argue with, because they can't really say, it's like, no, well, no, you weren't anxious, right?
Right.
Those
Although some people do try to argue someone else out of their feelings for sure, but.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And they need to argue it because they can't control their feelings. Right? That's the argument. Right?
Yeah, totally. And with that, yeah, you can see why this dance is like what you said at the very beginning, that this is something that it has a gift in it and it has the potential to make you really uncomfortable because it's confronting. Well, I don't know if I like the way that word confronting necessarily, but it's immersing yourself in whatever could happen.
Yeah.
It's unpredictable.
Really like what you just said. And I have to say that what you just said, like, points to something just so it's just so personally, so pertinent for me. And then when I got this, it just reminded me when I got this distinction that, like, getting this distinction was a game changer for me. And it's when I realized, right, that intimacy, right, that what intimacy was a function of, right, was simply, you could say intimacy is a function of my ability to tolerate anxiety. Right? It's just like, and I realized, like, I realized that you could say that, and you could say that, like, there's tolerating anxiety. And what I mean by that is just what you were talking about, is like, when I move towards aliveness, I'm entering into a moment where if I say that I'm really going to be, if, like, what's true for me, all of a sudden I'm walking along and I realize it's like, oh, what's true for me may actually, if I say it to you, may make you go away, right?
Yeah.
So, but here's the thing is if I don't say it, right, in order to keep you around, right, in that moment, intimacy is like the possibility for intimacy is diminished. And I would also say the aliveness of myself and what's possible starts to diminish. And it becomes harder and harder to actually be intimate because I'm relieving myself of the excitement, the aliveness and the excitation, right, that comes with actually when I say it and I cross that line, right, and I take that risk, I have no idea actually what's going to happen next. But at the end of the day, usually it's something completely odd, like there's something I couldn't have ever even conceived of, right? She may, But at the end of the day, that's actually kind of like you could say the growth aspect, I think, of intimacy. And where for us individually, where it does really deepen our hearts and it can become a very deeply spiritual practice, right? Now for me, I realized when I got that, I was like, ah, I realized I had been spending most of my life, right, like trying to get over being anxious or scared so that I can then be close or intimate, right? And so I
Wow.
realized, yeah, I just realized that that was like sitting on the dock of the bay, looking down at the water, staring at the water, trying to figure out how I can jump in the water without getting wet, right? And so there's something really relieving to me. It's like, as you'd imagine, the mind only moves towards what it thinks is possible. So if I think that like I can jump in the water without getting wet, right? I'm gonna sit there for fucking ever trying to work that out. But the moment I get, oh, right, you can't separate wetness from water. Like if I jump in, I will get wet. I just get up and I go out into the world and I move forward. And that's been the key for me with anxiety, with intimacy and relationships, and and I think it's the thing that encircling is the discomfort that we invite to sit inside of and increase our capacity like for aliveness versus submitting, controlling, dominating or dissociating. Like rather stay and grow in those moments. I saw a few, there's a couple of hums there and different gestures on your face in that
Oh my
moment.
word. Yeah. I mean, there's just so many things coming together. So, one of the, I think the, like a thread through all of the conversations on this podcast has been transitioning your relationship from one that I think is why a lot of us get into relationship, which is actually ironically avoiding intimacy in terms of how you just defined it. I think we get into relationship in order to provide ourselves with certainty and the like the medicative, is that a word? Medicative aspects of having sex with someone. And it's like you forget about all that stuff, like all that anxiety, all of that, all the uncertainty about what it would be like to put yourself out there with your inarguable truth to your partner. But I think what you just pointed to was a huge reason why relationships die, because it becomes this stacking of times when I didn't, when I chose to not be alive, when I chose to protect myself or protect you or to not say the thing that I thought would frighten you away, whether it was speaking to a desire that I have or the way that your desire frightens me, or I can think of any number of reasons why people turn away from the moment. So I think this really identifying intimacy, or at least I think a really important aspect of intimacy, as like jumping into the uncertainty with your partner. And of course, hopefully that comes with a lot of attention to the safety of your relationship so that your container can really hold
Totally.
that uncertainty.
Yes. Because it is really a
Yeah.
paradox. It is a paradox because the more basically what I'm telling, like I'm is if you don't if you kind of think about it, what I'm telling you maybe may make you crazy because I'm saying that like in order for basically to have more and more depth and confidence in my relationships, right? Just jump in and introduce more and more ambiguity. That the more we go into ambiguity together, right, and like really share what's there, right, without trying to control things, right, like risking things, over time, that like those moments over time, right, actually create a very a deep, genuine sense of security in the relationship.
Yeah.
Because what ends up happening is that we both start to realize what is, like, what our connection actually is, right. When I'm not like managing myself, right, so that I keep you, or so that you kind of go away in a certain level, or something like that. If I'm controlling things so that that doesn't happen, I'll never find out what the real bond of our relationship is, right? If I'm continually willing to be myself and inviting you to be yourself, where our personal comfort and preferences isn't the top priority, but knowing each other deeply is, then we may actually find that like, oh, that which is really true for us, right, all the way down, right, becomes the real, the genuine lived, shared reality, you could say bond that comes through risking that bond, right? So it's like
Yeah,
it is a paradox,
this
right?
is so interesting because I'm thinking about how encircling, and maybe you can talk a little bit more about the process of what that looks like so people really get what we're talking about. But there's some aspect to it where, strangely, when I, 'cause my experience of it, I'll just say what I experienced, which was, there was me, and there was a group of people in a semicircle around me, and they asked me questions about my experience. And there was also someone there to guide the questions a little bit to, and maybe you can speak a little bit more about what that is. And these questions were meant to help other people understand me and where I was coming from without judgment. And what was interesting was that in that experience, I felt very free to just answer their questions and to show up. And I felt like I was being asked to be fully me. And the art there is, I think, for the people who are asking the questions in the circle, is to not impose their experience on me, but to truly get into my shoes, like we were talking about before.
Right.
But and then I'm flashing to like relationship, where when you're with a partner, or even if you're just out on a date with someone who's not your partner yet, it can feel like there's so much at stake with how you answer their question or how they answer your question. And it's just ironic because these are the people that, at least in the case of being in partnership, we care about the most, you know, but there's more at stake somehow. And this is a theme on the show, is like this question of, well, how do you be more fully you? And how do you embrace your partner being more fully who they are? And how do you do that in a way where it's not threatening you, where you're actually able to contain that and thrive in that?
So there's a couple of things, I think there's so many things that question points to, and I'll come at it from this angle, because I think it's one of the things that circling really highlights, and I think is the unique thing that makes circling distinct from other things that kind of look like circling, and why circling has, since 1996, has gone like all over the world, right? It's in like billions of countries now. And I think it has to do with that there's this implicit understanding that who I am, right, is not a sole proprietorship. That the nature of how I even become is a function of relationship, right? That, like, you could say that it's not so much that there's a me that comes into relationship and then expresses itself and then you get to know me over here. It's more like, we come into a relationship, and in my expression, right, and your response to that, and my response to that, I find out who I am, right?
Yeah.
Right? There's like, and actually, it's in the relationship where something can be revealed about me that's so true that I didn't know about and couldn't have known about until that relational event happened, right? So there's this kind of like, I just noticed like, it looks like all kinds of neurons kind of shut up through your head, and you looked up a bit. I was just curious about like your, I want to find out who I am over there now.
Guy, you're rocking my world. Yeah, well, and I went to how there's a state of mind that's implicit there that allows me to be known rather than seeking out relational experiences that simply reinforce who I think I am.
Yeah, bingo. 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 And I think that because we think that there's me that then relates, that I would say that most relationships, people go into relationships, they think that's what relationships are. They're places where I can get mirrored back accurately what I think I need to be in order for you to like me.
Yeah.
To like myself, right? But there's a real different come from, and it's a paradigm shift, but I really do think that it is implicit in, I think it's implicit in nature. I think it's implicit in like biology and like digestion and wherever life unfolds, right? There's a constant becoming, right? And this is you could say, I'll put it like this. If you look at it in terms of evolution, right? Just to give this even more deep context, right?
Okay.
Right. So if the moment that life happened, right, it all went perfectly, there'd still only be one single cell organism, right? It's where life is introduced to irritation, right, and dissonance, that like that it life relates to that dissonance in such a way that it in order to deal with the irritation, it creates itself in a higher order of complexity, right? So then we have, like, in order to deal with, like, this kind of weird, I don't know, rock or something or weather pattern, right? Life forms into a hot, like a more organized, multi-celled, right, species, and which introduces new irritations. And if you rise that all the way up for a billion years, you end up with these beings talking to each other that can, like, somehow figure out how to, like, relate to each other here on Skype. All of it, right, is a function of life reaching out to become what it is, which is an amazing thing when you just think about, like, I'm going to, who I am is I have an urge to be what I am, right? Like, I reach out towards the environment and I relate, and that feedback loop, right, you could say tells me, right, who I am in that relational event, right? But all that has to do with dissonance, irritation. Just look at the earth and ask yourself, is it irritated? Heck yeah. Like, there's all kinds of stuff going on. And you ask yourself, is it alive? Hell yeah. Right? So it's like so when we go into relationships and we have the attitude of, like, oh, I guess I'm going to find out who I am here. Right? I'm going to find out who I am here, right? And so a lot of times, like, in this, and to bring it on a more practical level, I think you could say that, like, there's so many subtleties here, but, like, you could say, like, so right now, when I look at you, one of the things that is, like, is really prevalent to me that I often don't notice is that I have a conception of who I am in your head, right? There's a me being formed in your head right now, right? But there's also the me I think is over there. And so much of that is informing how I relate to you. So, for example, if I thought you were hating me as this conversation were unfolding, my heart rate would change, right? How I would respond to that, right? To, like, all those kinds of things that I, on some level, a part of me is tracking that, right? Now, when we just realize that that's part of the structure of I-thou relating, right, we can bring it and make that conscious, right? And I can say to you, it's like, oh, like, I'm imagining that you're not liking me right now, or that you're loving me right now, right? Is that true? Now, I was just using an example. And just doing that, I noticed my solar plexus kind of got more alive or something. And I wasn't even using, like, a real example and just saying that.
Yeah. And I'm imagining that that's because there's actually a physiology and an energetic component to,
yes,
being fully alive and being engaged. So just like asking a question like that, even though it's hypothetical, it's like the same thing as going to the gym and doing, you know, a squat or whatever. It's like you just worked out that part of your mechanism that's all about alive relationalism.
So as you're saying that, it's so funny. As you're saying that, I tuned into, like, who it is that you are right now to me in this conversation. And I was just like, what I've been noticing in our connection and in you is, like, it's like almost like I get the sense of, like, where you're so excited by what relationship is and the structures of what makes it tick, right? Like, all those places when I started talking about those different things, I watched you move around and get excited and, like, and it's like how that lives for me inside is I just feel an affinity for you and a love for you. And, like, as I'm talking right now, I feel like tears coming to my eyes, and I feel proud of you and admiring of you that you're doing right now with me, right? what you really, really love. And also, I also am at the same time, I think part of who you are for me too carries with it the backdrop of the history of knowing you and knowing that you weren't always doing that. And so
yeah.
that comes through in the pride. And I'm just really enjoying you, and I'm enjoying having you in my, you could say having you in me and in my awareness and how it's shaping me in this moment. How's that, hearing that? What do you notice? What's happening for you?
Well, it feels, I feel really seen, which in this moment, having said those words, it sounds a little cliche, but so I guess what that feels like for me is, I feel the absence of contraction. So I feel very at ease right now, and I feel some pride as well. That maybe that's your pride that I'm just kind of reflecting back at you, but I'm feeling like, yeah, there have been a lot of shifts. And as you were describing what you were seeing, I was thinking back to the coaching work that we did, and I'm remembering specifically how you know, the listeners, regular listeners on the podcast, have heard the story or aspects of the story to when Chloe and I broke up. And that was all happening when you and I were working together, or kind of interwove there for a little while. And I remember, and I wrote this to you, and I spoke these words to you, like how frustrated I was that these questions about relationship were so forefront for me. And I was like, I just want to put it all aside. And it feels like so ironic now, because, and this is how in many ways this podcast was born. It was because you spoke the words like, you know, Neil, it was something like this. Maybe that's really an important part of what you're about, is like that you're alive with probably almost the same words you just spoke to me. You're really alive with the curiosity of like how this all works, and it's important for you. And, you know, the next part of the story for people listening is that Guy told me to just imagine, like, what if instead of being all pissed off at relationship, if I just imagined every morning what it would be like if I embraced it, and if my entire life revolved around questions of relationship without making any plans or anything, just imagining what that would be like. And over the course of maybe 2 weeks, I would do that. Every morning I'd wake up and I just imagine what that would look like. And all these different ideas were popping into my head. And I would say, well, I'm not going to do that, but I'm just going to get in that feeling. And it just like took on so much life for me that by the end of 2 weeks, I was like, Guy, there's no stopping this. Like this ball is rolling, like, you know, and here we are, you know, 2 years later.
I remember, actually, it's interesting. I remember that conversation. I remember where we were sitting, and I remember I remember saying that to you, and your eyes going, opening up, like, oh, it's like all the neurons seem to like line up, and that place where it's like the thing that you were most complaining about, like that the essence of, like that there was something that you really cared about, opened up. And maybe what would happen if you just actually aligned your life in accordance to what you actually found yourself always like caring about, and like that light bulb went off. I now that really, like that, just hearing that, it's interesting. Yeah, I just kind of sense this sense of spaciousness like around me, and like I want to kind of stop and like kind of look at you for a moment and just kind of just be, you know, just be present to the clarity that's here.
Yeah, which makes for very challenging radio time, you know. We're just going to sit here for 2 minutes in silence and
yes,
gaze at each other. But I imagine that everyone's feeling it. Like, how can I'm right? You're listening to this and you're feeling what Guy is describing. It's like palpable, you know.
Yeah. And it's what's also what's palpable for me is there's like the insight that we're speaking about, the distinction that we're talking about, right? And but there's also what that's inside of, which is this we, you could say, that we have, right? And why we would stop and, like, you could say, gaze at each other, right? Or be in silence, right? Would be that what we would be inside, we would be implicitly honoring or acknowledging this third entity that called we, right?
Yes.
That somehow greater than the sum of the two of us. And we'd be implicitly acknowledging how it's creating us and in some way changing us, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's it feels really good.
You know, in that moment, really shows how relationship, when deep enough, right, can open up those kinds of changes, right? Those kinds of ways that relationship actually create us. And for me, actually, circling is, it's funny, it's like when I think about the circling and leading circles and developing circles and training people, like what my life is essentially about. All that, the whole world was invisible to me. I didn't even know about it. I didn't even know to not know about it until I met a friend of mine, Jerry, who we co-founded Circling years ago while I was in art school, being an artist, and was thinking that was my life path. And then he starts inviting me. He clearly sees something that I do that he can't describe, that he's excited about, right? And he brings me in. He's excited to introduce me to his friends, and so I start hanging out. And I don't know what the hell. I don't like, you know, what the hell is this guy, dude? Like, he's interesting, but he's clearly interesting in something. I don't even know what he's talking about, right?
Uh huh.
And so we're hanging out with his friends, and we're having like conversations, and the conversations are start to go deeper, and things started to happen where I would say something to somebody or respond to somebody in these conversations with this group of his friends in a way that where somebody like Jerry or Tom or somebody would pause. They'd pause everything. They go, like, I remember one time they paused everything and they said, stop, hang on. That thing that you just said, I had to pay $10,000 to not understand that distinction that you just shared, right? And it was in that moment that, like, I remember that precise moment really spoke to me, because that was a moment where I stopped and I was just talking, but I naturally had a gift, right? That was no one, like was invisible, indistinct, wasn't anything to me until somebody spoke it. They shared it and it became distinct. Like, I can only relate to things that I have distinctions for. I couldn't relate to this gift that then became my life. But if they hadn't have said it, I don't know what would be happening for me right now, right? And in different ways, people says things like that. And as that became distinct, right, this is before we had the word circling, right? And all the whole vocabulary and the depth of distinction that continues to deepen around what circling is, none of those were there, including the guy who created it, right? until the listening of the people I was in relationship with, the listening actually distinguished me, right? I started to, so once I saw that, oh, I have this gift, then I could start to relate to it and I could start to notice it, right? And as I noticed it, it opened up the world of like noticing more things about that and then noticing like how that somehow created me in a different way. And you could say that whole process where you could say that guy, to whatever degree the guy kind of created circling and helped found all of those things, it was really a function of the people who kind of listened me into existence, if you will.
Yeah, as you were describing that, I got this sense, and we did touch on this a little bit earlier, but of like, what is it like? What would it be like to go through the world looking for the clues? Like, rather than thinking this is who I am and I'm looking for people to reflect that back at me, what would happen if you went through life looking for the clues about who you really are and what your gifts really are in how people listen and reflect that back to you?
Yes, and I when I and I immediately I love that I love that and immediately I started thinking about like, huh, what would if I were to like go through my life and look for the clues, what would be a good method of investigation, right? What would be a good way to look? And I think it what it would probably be is like I would start to actually listen for and track and notice and share what other people's gifts were. Right, it would be like I think I would start to like I would start to just notice other people's gifts and see them, which implicitly would invite a conversation, right?
Yeah.
That would track that, right? Which
And
is
that's circling.
that's yeah, well, that's circling, right? It circles back, right? Yes, absolutely.
Guy, I would love to ensure that everyone listening, when they're done listening to this conversation, that they have a sense of like, okay, next time I go out on a date, I'm gonna try this thing, or I'm gonna go home to my partner tonight, and after the kids are asleep, or if you don't have kids, right away, and I'm gonna try this thing. But before we talk about that, so I'll give you a second to think about it. I'm wondering if you could just let our listeners know. Like, if they want to find out more about you, about circling, read some of your writings, get in touch with you to find out more about your coaching work, how can they do that?
Okay, so if you're interested in coaching with me, just simply email me at guysinkstock@gmail.com and I'll get back to you and we'll get together and talk about working together one-on-one. If you're interested in some of my writings in my blog articles, you could look at guysinkstock.com. Those are some articles and posts that I've done. And if you're interested in being trained to circle, which is what I'm doing professionally now, is really, you could say, circling, there's the practice of circling, but then there's the underlying methodology that actually has been formed organically over the years that is turned out to be an actual method of transformation. And so that's what I'm really fostering is the deeper, more professional side of circling, which is training people, coaches and therapists and other leaders to be able to not only facilitate circling, but to take the essence of circling and bring it into their professional life, into their companies, into their work with their clients, therapists and coaches. And it's really become known as perhaps some of the deepest, like you could say, in terms of deep, profound coaching, the depth aspect of coaching, that I think they were really the best at the world at the in the world at that at this point. The feedback, and I'm just,
Great.
yeah. So if you're interested in being trained to do circling, go to the circlinginstitute.com.
Great. Yeah, thank you. So circlinginstitute.com or guysengstock.com. And if you're listening, the guys, actually, you are listening, so that's kind of silly. But guy, his last name is spelled SENGSTOCK.
Yes.
Okay. So thank you, Guy. And again, thanks so much for your generous offer of a free 2-hour coaching session to one lucky listener. If you want to qualify for that, again, just download the show guide at neilsatin.com/circle, or you can text the word passion to the number 33444 and follow the instructions, which will also qualify you. Such a generous offer.
Also, really, so I just I, I'm Just so you know, I just have brought more of my attention onto my one-on-one coaching just recently, now that we have our courses going. So I actually have two slots open for people who want to work with me one-on-one in coaching. So if they're probably going to fill up pretty quick. So if you're interested, email me right away, and then we'll get on the phone and see if it's fit.
Great. Yeah, thanks for encouraging that.
You got it.
And you must also have a waiting list for when spots open.
Yeah, totally.
So if you're listening to this and it's a couple weeks after airtime, still reach out for Guy as well. Great. So then before we bring it to a close, Guy, I'm wondering if you have a what's something that like a takeaway for people if they as if they haven't gotten enough already. Yeah, here's something that you should try at home.
Yeah. I would say, and of course, adjust this based on the context, but walk if you go home or if you go in work or somewhere that in a relationship that you care about, is simply see what happens when you introduce your experience of what's happening right now in the relationship. Even if it's just something, in fact, it can be something like, and I would encourage it to actually be something that you really, really appreciate. It's like, right now I'm noticing, Neil, like you have both fingers up and there's this smile on your face, and I'm just imagining that you're just appreciating and reveling in the moment, and seeing that, I'm just noticing I have a warm sense of gratitude and affinity and gratefulness to you. And then just pause and find out what happens. But what's cool is notice that by the time you end up, I end that sentence, I have no idea what's going to happen next, right? Which is really different, because usually a lot of times we speak to each other in order to know actually what's going to happen after we talk. Yeah. And
Right,
just
there's so much planning involved.
totally. So just bring in, like we talked about before, is not a triangular conversation, but like an in the moment, just sharing what's happening right now in a generous way.
Great. Yeah. We've talked before about having a practice of gratitude for your partner. And it didn't occur to me until this moment that it could also be a practice that's in the moment. So not like I'm grateful for about this thing of yours, but this is what I'm grateful for right now in this moment with you.
Yes, totally, totally. And you just admit, you admit, it's like it's just so cool, because it's like, it's the possibility of growth and aliveness in relationships in every single one, in every single moment. Like there's a whole dimension of the present that is accessible through language in that way, that is the stuff that is what it is, aliveness itself.
Yeah. And what do you think that would do if someone were on a date with someone?
That's the other thing, is like a lot of people say, that if you're single, like learning how to circle, I hear this all the time, is that it does amazing things for your dating life.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like you can have these conversations where people get really, really seen. They feel really seen. On the first date, you could start to like you can see somebody and have the experience of feeling somebody and being felt and being seen, that in the first time, that like a lot of times it takes years to have happen. So I think in dating life, since dating life is such a, is so intentionally designed, let's get to know each other, right, to see if there's some kind of future, right? Well, where do we feel the future in terms of that? It's like how the conversation's going, right? So if we can start to become masterful about elucidating the space and the possibility of that conversation, I mean, that like just all automatically translates into kick-ass dating, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And because it's going to take you out, or at least help you embrace the anxiety in the moment in a way that's fun, and where you're asking yourself, what am I going to learn about myself from this person? And
And here's one other thing about the anxiety. When I like a lot of times we hide our anxiety, right? Or try to get over it. But when I display my anxiety, right? It implicitly implies that I care. I care about how this is going. Otherwise, I wouldn't be anxious. And maybe I share my anxiety, but I think the thing I can share for sure is like that I care, right? I care enough to be anxious. Which introduces a whole new dynamic into the relationship, you know?
And I'm imagining too, like when you're out on a date or with your partner and you're noticing that they are anxious or nervous,
Yes.
rather than having that be some black mark against them,
Yeah.
you could see it as an expression of how much they really care.
Totally, totally. And you can even say, it could even be an entry point of like, oh, wow. Like I'm imagining that you feel anxious. Something's important to you, I'm imagining, right?
Yeah, and then you get to find out what it is.
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
It may be that they're thinking about the stock market or something, but
Yeah,
the
totally.
dive it just took or whatever.
Totally.
Guy, so great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom about relating, and also just on a personal note, again, I'm so grateful for your part in my own growth. And that's what's allowed me to help people in relationship and my coaching career with people in relationship and around relationship. And we've spoken about this on the show, the importance of coaching. And it's not like just because it's great, it's because there's this capacity in a good coach to help you see what you just couldn't, you wouldn't see it on your own. And I think you explained it well, that it's not just necessarily the perceptiveness of the coach, although that helps a lot in their training and their ability to listen rather than imposing an agenda upon their client. But also it's the relatedness that elicits whatever the insight or the gift or that reveals the blind spot.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes.
So thank you so much for being on our show today, and I look forward to hearing from our listeners with feedback about our time together.
Fantastic. This is awesome. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Relationship Alive. If you like what you've heard and want to make it easier for other people to find out about us, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast and to rate and review us on iTunes. If you have questions or comments or want to continue the conversation, you can always join our Relationship Alive community Facebook group. And for more information about today's episode, visit us online at neilsatin.com/podcast. Or you can always text the word passion, PASSION, to the number 33444 for more information. Finally, do you have a burning question that you're hoping we can have answered here on Relationship Alive, either for a future or past guest? Let me know and I'll see what I can do. Take care and see you next time.